This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
The pursuit for food has taken us into the wilderness, across rivers, and atop mountains. These journeys have connected us to the wild. This connection allows us to experience the wild places this world has to offer in search of both wild game and adventure. This is my adventure for food. Hello, my name is John McAdams. I'm glad to talk to you today and to share this adventure for food with you. Last year, I took my 7-year-old son on a backcountry mule deer hunt in New Mexico. Now, I used to live in El Paso. I live in East Texas now, but back when I lived in El Paso, I hunted this part of New Mexico several times, and I knew the area fairly well. But this was going to be my first time taking my 7-year-old son there, and this was also going to be his first serious hunt. I had taken him out on some white-tailed deer hunts close to where I live out here in East Texas, and he had done really well, but we're going to step things up a notch here and take him out, go camping out in the wilderness like this, and see about getting a mule deer or something like that on a more serious hunt. So we got out there, set up camp. Weather was very mild when we got out there. It was mid-70s, sunny, no problem at all. Got all set up, ready to go Friday. Saturday morning, deer season started. We go out there and get out to one of my favorite glassing spots. Sun comes up and look, and there's just cows everywhere. We see maybe two or three does and fawns and whatnot that morning, but we saw probably 20 or 30 cows. Now, we were hunting on a mix of Forest Service and BLM land, and so this is not an uncommon experience out there. People graze their cattle out there. No problem. Let's go to a different spot in the afternoon. Go out that afternoon, same deal. More and more cows, just a couple deer. And I thought, okay, no problem. This area is really big. We got thousands and thousands of acres to hunt on out here. Let's try something different tomorrow, and we'll go to a different place. And hopefully we won't find any cows out there. So next morning, wake up real early. It's just misting rain, just real nasty. It had already dropped to maybe 30 degrees Fahrenheit from the previous day, so it had gotten a lot colder. Like I said, misting rain like that, and I'm looking around as I'm getting ready in the morning, and I'm thinking to myself, gosh, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to see anything if I go out there. I could only see maybe 100 yards from our camp that morning with that kind of mixture of fog and light precipitation like that. And so I thought, okay, no problem. It's just the second day out there. We got still got several more days. I don't want to push my son too much. Let's just hang out in camp this morning, and we'll just wait for it to clear up. And so we hung out in the camp all morning, and then the morning turned into afternoon, and it just, if anything, it was getting worse and worse. It was raining just enough that you go out there for 15 minutes and you get pretty wet. So I was like, all right, and we still couldn't see anything either. So I said, well, buddy, let's go get in the truck and we'll just drive around. Maybe we can see something. If nothing else, we'll just kill some time. And we drove around and same deal. We could see maybe 100 yards from the road, and that was about it. And I got out and I walked a little bit, and I just got wet and I couldn't see anything. And I thought, man, I'm just spinning my wheels out here, and I'm looking at my phone, looking at the weather forecast, trying to figure out what's going on. And we're far enough from any major town here that the weather forecast that I'm getting is not accurate. It says, yeah, it should be a nice, clear, sunny day, no rain in the forecast or anything. And I'm thinking to myself, this is clearly not accurate. That's not what's going on here. And it's getting colder and colder and colder as the day goes on. He's getting kind of cabin fever at this point, and so am I, and we're getting kind of bored and frustrated. I decided, you know, let's just go into town. We'll kind of reset things. And so we drove 30 miles into town, got some McDonald's and stuff there, got some groceries, refilled the gas in the car, drove back up there, and it had continued to rain, and it had continued to get colder and colder. And it was just getting below freezing when we made it back out there that evening. And I thought, man, this is just getting better and better. And I was worried about there being ice on the road and all that sort of stuff. And so we're getting back in the tent, and it's nice and warm in the tent. I got a little propane heater and stuff in there. And I said, okay, hey, I think tomorrow's going to be a better day. It's going to be cold, but that's going to hopefully get these deer up and moving, and hopefully it's going to stop raining. And so I wake up, you know, 4 o'clock the next morning, and it is cold. It went from about 75 degrees to 20 degrees over the course of just over 24 hours like that. But it was crystal clear morning. See, beautiful. Okay, this is going to be the day. We're going to go out there. We're going to do it. Since it had rained all day that previous day, everything was wet, and then it froze that night. And so, like, the whole north side of my car was just covered in ice that morning. I had to break ice off of my car to get into it. And so I get my son all bundled up, and I'm having to show him, okay, listen, this is how we dress when it's really cold outside. We're going to layer our clothes like this. We're going to put on a couple pair of pants. We're going to put on our nice wool socks and everything. And I want you, when we walk out to where we're going to hunt this morning, I want you to not wear your jacket. We're just going to carry your jacket, and then you're going to warm up doing that. When you get out there, sit down. We'll put the jacket back on, and you can put all your gloves and hat on. It's going to be good, right? So he's wearing a sweatshirt and all that stuff, and he's like, okay, no problem. And I keep asking him, hey, are you doing good? Are you warm? And he keeps saying, oh, yeah, Dad, I'm doing great. Everything's good. Okay, no problem. So we have breakfast. We get out to where we're going to hunt. He's being a good listener and all that stuff. He's doing exactly everything I tell him. And we get out to where we're going to go, and I ask him, okay, are you cold? You know, he's like, yeah, I'm cold, but I'll just put on my jacket and we'll zip it up and all that, and I'll be okay. Okay, all right, get him all set up, get him fixed up in his little spot that morning. I get everything set up to start glassing. The sun comes up, and I don't see any cows. So we're off to a good start out here, and I'm looking around and trying to find the deer out there that morning. After a couple minutes, he says, Dad, my feet are starting to feel kind of weird. I said, what's wrong, man? I think maybe your feet are falling asleep or something. You're sitting on them kind of weird. And he says, no, Dad, I think I'm getting cold. I think I'm getting frostbite on my feet. And I said, listen, 10 minutes ago, you said you were fine. You're not just going from that to frostbite. Just stand up and walk around for a little bit. It's okay. I think your foot's asleep. And he's getting more and more distraught now. He says, Dad, I think I'm getting frostbite. I want to go back to the truck. And he's almost on the verge of tears at this point. I said, okay, no problem. Listen, let's get our stuff. We'll get back it up. Go back to the truck. And we walk, it's not quite a mile. It's maybe 3/4 of a mile back to the truck. So it's not a very long walk. And we get about halfway back, and I ask him, hey, how's your feet doing? How's that frostbite doing? He says, my feet feel fine, Dad. I think my feet just fell asleep. And I said, okay, that's what I thought. But, you know, I didn't see anything over here. We were kind of noisy and everything with all that. Let's just get in the car, and we'll go to a different spot, and we'll glass from there. So get into the car and start driving down this old Forest Service Road, and I look out to the side, and I see something moving out there, and I look, and it's 3 elk cows. I said, oh, that's really cool. I knew there was elk out here, but I've never seen them before. So we got to see these cow elk out there that morning. So we're already off to a better start than we had been. I hadn't seen any deer yet this morning, but there was no cows, and I saw these elk cows, and my son is doing better. And so we drive another couple hundred meters, and we get to a canyon that I'd always driven by but never looked into before. And I said, hey, let's get out of the car, and let's walk over here, and we'll just look around it and see if there's anything in there. I've always wondered if there's anything interesting in there. Okay, no problem, Dad. So I just take my binoculars, my tripod, my rifle, and I start walking over there. I'll hit pause on this story here for a second. I got to fill you in on something that happened earlier in the hunt. When we get out there on the first afternoon, I'm telling him about everything. Listen, this is a serious hunt. You need to be a real good listener out here. It's just you and me out here. If something happens, you know, you need to pay attention to what I'm telling you. I'm going to take care of you. But listen, if something happens to me out here, I pulled out my InReach and I showed him, listen, I'm going to leave this on. I want you to push this button and it's going to call for help. And so if I fall down and I hit my head or I get bit by a snake or something, just push this button. Someone's going to come and help us, and you stay with me. He says, okay, no problem, Dad. So I showed him where it was in my backpack and everything. We get out of the car and we start walking towards this canyon that morning. And remember, everything is covered in ice because it rained all the previous day and everything froze that night. And so we're walking, walking, walking. And then all of a sudden, I slip on a patch of ice on a rock out there. This area has rocks and stuff everywhere. This rock was about as big as a coffee table. Normally, you walk across it, no problem, but it was covered in ice this day. I slipped on this rock, and it was like one of the guys from Home Alone slipping on the ice when Kevin McAllister was making the traps for him. That's how I pictured myself flying up in the air. It was one of the most ridiculous falls I've ever had in my life. So I slip, and wham, I fell straight back down on my back. I'm kind of rolling around and moaning there, and I hit the ground with this just god-awful thud. And at this point, my son, I look at him, and his eyes are as big as saucers. He says, Dad, are you okay? Do I need to hit the button on the inreach? I said, no, it's okay. I just knocked the wind out of myself. It's okay. I'm not really hurt. Just give me a second. Fortunately, I didn't hit my head or anything. But, man, I knocked the heck out of myself, and I fell on my rifle, too. I look, and the rifle looks like it's in pretty good shape. I got kind of a gash cut in the scope, but I'm thinking maybe it's just cosmetic. I don't know. I can focus it okay. I can adjust the magnification okay. Everything looks like it works okay. And all of a sudden, I just kind of lose interest and go in to check out this canyon. I said, you know what? Let's just go back to the truck and let's just go back to camp, man. So we get back to camp. I'm thinking, you know, I probably need to shoot this rifle and check and make sure that it's still zeroed after falling on it like that. There's a big canyon right by our camp. We'll go check it out, make sure there's nothing in there, and I'll shoot a couple shots and make sure everything's good. So we go up to the edge of this canyon by where we were camped, and I start looking around down there, making sure there's no people or cows or anything. And I look, it's like, what the heck is that? And I look, it's a deer down in this canyon. And then I look, and it's another deer. It's two little bucks down there, maybe 1,000 yards straight line distance from where we were camped. You could walk 100 yards from our camp and see them there. I was like, wow, this is really cool. And so I pulled my son over. We start looking through it with our glasses. First bucks we've seen out there. They start fighting with each other. They're almost exactly the same size. I wonder if they were brothers or something, but they start fighting and tussling a little bit. We're sitting there watching them, and this car drives by on the road behind us 100 yards away. And then, like happens sometimes on public land, the car stops and then starts backing up towards where we are. And I was like, oh no. And I see these guys get out, and they start looking over where the deer are with their binoculars, and then they all pile out with their rifles, and they make a beeline over towards where these deer are. They saw it, and they started making a stalk on it. Well, luckily for these deer, these guys weren't paying attention to the wind. They go upwind of the deer. They got only maybe 200 yards from them, but their scent blew straight to the deer. The deer smelled them, and they just trotted off straight up the canyon, almost straight away from us. And I watched them for a while, and I thought, okay, well, fair enough, right? Well, these guys are still in the canyon here. My son's name is James, so they're still in the canyon, James. Let's go. There's another spot up the road here. We'll go try and shoot there. We get in the car. We start driving up this road, and it kind of parallels this canyon that the deer had run up. We go maybe a mile up this canyon, and I'm almost to the turnoff where I want to go and shoot, and I'm just, you know, kind of casually looking out into this canyon where the deer went, and I saw something that caught my eye, so I got out, and I got my tripod set up, and I start looking, and I was like, what is that under that juniper tree there? I look, and then it moved. It's like, oh, it's a deer, and then I look even closer. Oh, it's a buck, and then after watching it for a minute, it stands up and stretches and gets in the shade or in the sun and starts eating. So what had happened was, I think these were the same deer that we saw earlier that these guys had spooked, and they had just gone up the canyon a mile where no one was messing with them. And they laid down there for a couple minutes, and then it was maybe 8:30 in the morning at this point. The sun was full up. These deer were on the south and the east side of this canyon, so they were getting lots of sun. So it was a warm spot out there for them. So they get up and stretch, and they tussle a little bit, and see them eating berries and whatnot off of this tree there. And they're just kind of casually having a nice, easy morning. And they're maybe 450 yards away from me at this point. Not super far, but farther away than I want to shoot. So I carefully walk back to the truck, and I grab my son, and I show him, hey, listen, these deer are here. No one else is here. Let's go make a stalk on them before these guys get a chance to blow it for us again. Because they weren't very big, but they were legal bucks there. And at this point, I was thinking, you know, maybe it's best just to try and get a bird in the hand rather than anything else, especially with how cold it is and all that stuff. I get a couple things out for my son to help me carry, and we start sneaking up towards where these deer are. And there are a bunch of juniper trees spaced maybe every 5-10 yards, something like that. So I wouldn't say it's thick, but it's actually just a perfect setup where you can walk and use these trees for cover and keep the deer from seeing you, but it's not a pain in the rear to walk through. It's not real hard going. And so we'll walk up straight up behind one tree, peek around the side of it, see the deer are still there, sneak around the other side, and we slowly close the distance. Now, I'm looking around for good places to shoot, and the problem is just the way things are set up here. We're on kind of the lip of a canyon, and it's starting to angle down. There's no real good spot for me to stop and shoot from the prone here. And I'm thinking, man, I may need to shoot sitting or something. And so I have a tripod that I can shoot sitting off of, and I just got to find an open spot with enough cover or an open enough spot where I can sit down and shoot and have a clear shot on these deer. You know, if I get in a spot and set up and there's some bushes that are just barely too tall in front of me that they're kind of getting into the bottom of my line of sight. So I'll get up and move. And so we're doing this over and over again. We finally get to about 320, 330 yards. So we've knocked off about 100 yards or so from where we were. Get set up perfectly. I got my son on his tripod looking through his binoculars at these deer. I'm on my tripod getting ready to shoot. There's two deer. Like I said, they're about the same size. One of them is a little bit closer and presenting a better shot than the other one. The other one's kind of got his head stuck in the bush and stuff eating. The one that's closer to me turns broadside, and I said, okay, James, I'm going to shoot this one. You know, watch what happens here. Rock solid shooting position. Put the crosshairs on him. Squeeze the trigger. Boom. And the deer jumps and kind of looks around. Like, what the heck was that? But he doesn't look like he was hit. And he takes a couple steps forward and then turns. So he was broadside to me when I shot. Now he takes a couple steps forward, turns. And he's almost directly facing on to me at this point. And he's looking around trying to figure out what happened. His buddy is clueless. He's just having breakfast over there. I thought, well, I think I missed him. Let me shoot again. Chamber, another round. Fire. Boom. He goes down like a sack of potatoes at this point. Boom, just down for the count. That is it. And I've had instances like this before where I've shot a deer or whatever and had it go down, and then I go up to – I immediately run over there. By the time I get there, the deer is gone because I didn't make a good shot on it. So in this case, I was being very careful. Chamber another round. I get back on him, and he's kicking and moving a little bit here, and I'm watching him, just staying on him in case I need to shoot him again. And I tell my son, okay, I got him. He's down. Let's wait, make sure he's down for good. And so I tell him to count to 100. Let me know when he's done. He counts to 100. Deer stopped moving at this point. Everything's good. And I said, okay, I think we got him. Let's go back to the truck. We'll put this stuff away. We'll get our backpacks, and we'll walk over there. We'll get him. Okay, Dad, man, he's just so excited now. He's a completely different guy from this morning with his fake frostbite on his feet. So he gets his backpack. I get my backpack. We go over there. Deer's where we thought he was, and perfect. It was great. Nice little deer. Not a real big deer. 2.5-year-old buck. But this was a big-bodied deer. And I don't know if that's just how they get in this part of New Mexico or what. But I've put a couple whitetail on the scale out here in East Texas that, like, the biggest ones weighed 170, 180 pounds on the hoof. And this deer was every bit as big in the body as those were. And so it was a lot of work getting him out of there. My son helped me do the gutless method and butcher him out there. So we got all four quarters, the back straps, the neck meat, the rib meat, the tenderloins, all that stuff on him. He was helping me skin it, helping me cut it off, and I'm showing him all the different body parts to it and all that stuff. My mom had gotten her hip replaced of the previous year, and so I was showing him in the hips of the deer. See, this is a ball and socket joint. This is what the doctor was replacing on Nana when they replaced her hip and all that stuff. And this is the tenderloins. This is the back straps and all that. And, you know, this is the neck meat, and you could use it for this and that. You know, some of these things you turn into hamburger meat. Some of them you turn into steak. And all that. And then I show them the entrails of the deer a little bit. I say, you know, this is the heart, this is the lungs, this is the liver, this is how it all works together. And so he's just fascinated by this whole deal. He's doing a real good job helping me with it. I took some pictures of him holding the buck out there. When we got back home, he was telling all his friends that he got a deer on a hunt in New Mexico. It was great. This deer, like I said, wasn't super big, but it was big enough that it was going to be a little bit of a challenge to get him out of there. Not like an elk or anything like that. And I was like, you know, how do we want to do this? I wonder if we can get this whole thing out in one go. So I put basically all the meat in my backpack, and my son was like, Dad, I really want to carry the head out. And I said, okay, you could do that if you want to. So I cut the head off, and I put it in his backpack, cinched it down on him. I got him a little trekking pole. I got my trekking pole, and it's maybe you know, less 500 yards, like actual on the ground walking out of there. So not super long, not a super challenging steep hike out or anything like that, but he's just working his little tail off, getting this deer out of there. And I got all the meat on my back and everything. I got a heavy pack too, and he's like, Dad, I'm tired. I got to take a break. I said, no problem, man. We're like, our hunt's over. Like, this is great. We got all the time in the world. We, you know, we take a break, and, you know, okay, we need to take another break. And we finally get back to the truck and all that. And he's like, oh, Dad, I'm really tired. That was really heavy. You know, I get him set up in the truck and all that. And I got to thinking, I weighed his backpack later, and it was about 20 pounds. And relative to his body weight, that was like me carrying a 100-pound pack out of there. So, especially, he'd never done that before, never trained for it or anything. So he's a good kid and good shape and all that. But it's amazing how hard it is if you've never done it before. But so we shot that deer on, October 30th. And he had told me he wanted to go trick-or-treating the next day. So I said, okay, we're going to shoot a deer on the 30th, got to get this thing all packed up, get camp torn up. We're going to wake up really early on the 31st, and we're going to drive all the way across the state of Texas and get back home so you can go trick-or-treating that night. So that's what we did. So that was a heck of a hunt, an amazing adventure for the two of us. I'm so glad we got to share that whole experience together. I had done this hunt previously before, and it never was extremely difficult. You'd have a little bit of weather in there and whatnot, but nothing like I experienced on this trip before. Usually the temperatures are mild. Usually the area has good enough road access. You can drive around a lot in it if you get tired, but there's also a good amount of spots where you can walk, and the terrain's not too hard and all that. That'd be good for him, but I had no idea it was going to be dealing with the ice and the super cold weather and all that stuff. But I was so proud of him for how well he did, because aside from that one incident, he did great with the cold. He did great with keeping his head about him and remembering what I told him about the in reach and all of that stuff. And then he did great when it came to actually finding the deer and getting him out of there and then helping me carry it and all that stuff. And so that was a really good memory that I'm so glad we got to have together. Great adventure for hunting, great adventure for food. And so once again, my name is John McAdams. Thank you so much for listening to this hunting adventure with me today. You can hear more stuff from me, to include some of my other hunting stories, on my show, The Big Game Hunting Podcast. It's available wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can go to biggamehuntingpodcast.com. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, and happy hunting.